feel like we've somewhat been neglecting the young adults. And I certainly don't want to do this, because one of the things I want to impress upon you over time is that this is not my church, and it's not your parents' church. This is your church. And so you should be looking for ways that you can serve in it, but also gleaning what you can out of it. And if there's something that's lacking for you, you should say something. Because we don't want to do that. I don't want to just talk to the older generations, and I don't want to just focus on the younger generations. So for today, I am going to cover quite a bit in a short amount of time, and for some of you, it's going to be way over your head. Don't worry about it. You're going to start hearing some terms, maybe for the first time. Some of you have heard the terms, are very familiar with them. I guarantee all of you, and when I say all of you, the older generations, on down to even some of the younger, you're going to hear something for the first time and go, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And maybe you can put it into practice. You're probably going to end up with questions. I'd really like to encourage you to see me or Steve or somebody that's been in and around this topic for a big number of years. Feel them out for some things. For me personally, I've shared with most of you, I'm preparing here within the next 8 months now to leave my day job of about 33 years. I've been a goldsmith. I've been a goldsmith for 36 years. I've been with my current employer for 33 of those years. But I started working when I was 15. My first job was at a music store, and one of the things I really enjoyed doing was from time to time we'd get in a shipment of guitars. It was my job to unbox them and get them up on the wall. But that means they had to be strung, tuned, and then put up on the wall, which means I got to play every single one. And it cost me more money than what I was making, because I bought two guitars out of the time I was with the music store. But I utilized music throughout the years a little bit to my benefit. I can say that the years I played in bands where we made money professionally, I covered my expenses, which means I got to buy the equipment that I really wanted to play with. And in the long run, it really didn't cost me anything. But I certainly didn't get paid for all the time and effort I put into that. So considering that I started at 15, that means I've been working for 44 years of my life. I'm 58, going on 59. It's a lot of my life. That's a big percentage. I didn't figure out the percentage, but it's a big percentage of my life. And sadly, the same is going to hold true for you. The big majority of your life is you're going to be doing some type of work. The question is, what kind of work and to what extent? If we go over to Exodus 20 and verse 9. God says, 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work. So we have 6 days in a 7-day week, not today, not the seventh, but 6 days to put effort into these things that will, in one sense, benefit us more directly. And it's not just a suggestion. He very clearly here commands us, 6 days shall you labor, you will labor. That word shall, or that phrase shall labor, if we look at the Hebrew, it means you shall serve. Wait a second. If I'm laboring, that means I'm serving somebody else. I'm not serving myself. No. It means to serve. That means to grow something, to multiply it, to preserve it, to maintain it. So who are we indentured to in a sense? We can see that in Genesis 1. Go to verse 28. In Genesis 1, verse 28, God blessed them, meaning Adam and Eve, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. We're to be stewards of all of his creations. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves upon the earth. We're going to spend the vast majority of our lives in some type of labor. And then thanks to the fall, Adam and Eve eating of the forbidden fruit, it got harder. Because he says, now you are going to have to toil for your food. So we are going to have to sweat at times. Does that mean we have to only labor at a job that means excruciating toil? No. That's a lot of what we're going to focus on today. God didn't create us to just simply pay bills. Now, you that don't have bills yet, don't understand. There's a new one coming every single day. And it does feel like, for a lot of us, that all we do is just constantly pay the next bill. But that is not what God created us for. He wants us to be channels of blessing. That means blessings are going to flow from him through us. But there's some criteria for that. The world tells us to go out and earn a paycheck so that we can pay our bills. And maybe buy some nice things for ourselves. Again, God tells us that our labor in his creation, that we're to be stewards over it, that it continues to flourish and grow. Now we have to consider his creation. What all that means. It's not just the birds and the animals, it's this land that he lets us walk on. At some point, hopefully, we're going to find our niche, or we should be looking to find out what our niche is in all of this. And once we do, and I'm talking about on a spiritual level, not simply physical. Yes, very much we're going to be talking physically today, but I'm also talking very much spiritually. But once we find our niche in what God would have us do and how he would have us do it, we're going to be blessed, not simply with income, living one paycheck to another, but blessed with abundance, with comfort, and with peace. And that's something all of us want. That doesn't mean there's not going to be bumps in the road. But when the bumps come, we've done some preparation. And go, oh, yeah, I was hoping that wasn't going to happen, but I'm kind of prepared. Too often, professing Christians believe in miracles. Nothing wrong with that. And they pray. But they pray for provision while still living in the world system, which usually is impulsive spending, not having a game plan, not having a budget, dependence on a single paycheck. What if that employer goes bankrupt overnight without any warning to you? And no financial planning, meaning by you. That's how the world treats everyday life. We have to consider the fact that God will not bless disorder. He blesses obedience and order. The earlier in life that we can understand and implement this, the quicker we're going to see God in action with blessings for us. So for me personally, I'm really not retiring because I'm still going to be working. Quite honestly, I'm afraid I'm going to be working more than ever, at least for a couple of years. But will it be something that I enjoy? Yeah, it will be, because I'm walking towards something that I do enjoy and I have quite a bit of experience in. What I'm really doing is transitioning from an active income to a passive income. So there's our first two terms. That I want you to know about and consider. Active versus passive income. So an active income, or an active income, means you're going to perform a task, I'll say once for the sake of example, and you get paid for that one-time task. For your next paycheck, you have to do it over again. It's a day job, right? We have to go back next Monday so that we can get next Friday's paycheck again. Passive income, you perform a task or maybe a short series of tasks once, but then you get multiple paychecks from it. It generates ongoing income. So I've got two scenarios here. Under active income, we're going to build a house, brand new. That house is going to cost us $100,000. A new build. When we're done with it, we throw it up for sale, and we're going to get a paycheck, right? But now if we want another paycheck, what do we have to do? We have to build another house. Or do another task, maybe totally different. But for passive, we built the $100,000 house, but we're not going to put it up for sale right away. We're actually going to put it up for rent. Okay? When we put it up for rent, we're going to get paid once a month from our renters. And for this example, we're going to rent it out for $1,000 a month. It's probably a little bit on the low end for today's. So we've got $1,000 a month. And we're going to hold this piece of property for 10 years. How many months is that? 120 months. At 120 months over 10 years, it's $120,000 of income. We have a house still in our possession that's worth $100,000. Ooh, wait, maybe not. Because at the end of the 10 years are over with, we've collected our $120,000 in rent. And over 10 years, I would hope that you would have raised rent a couple of times. But I'm trying to keep this a little bit on the simple side. But 10 years is over with, and we decide, let's sell this house. Something about real estate
It very, very rarely depreciates. That means go down in value. It usually appreciates. So at the end of 10 years, I think it's well within reason that we're not going to sell it for $100,000, is what it was worth when we first built it. But now we're going to sell for $150,000. So we built a house for $100,000, we kept it for 10 years, we rented it for $120,000, and then we sold it for $150,000. Here we got a single paycheck. Here we get multiple paychecks, don't we? Now there's a term we need to bring into this, or another two terms we need to bring into this. And that's gross income versus net income. The numbers I've shared with you so far are gross. It's just the income. But there was expenses along the way. So over here, we're renting this for $1,000 a month. But we also have to pay the taxes, the property taxes on it. And so we're just going to say that our taxes are $130 a month. Over 10 years, that equals $15,600. We have insurance in case there's a fire in the house, a flood, something like that. Let's say that's $140 a month. After 10 years, that means we've paid $16,800. Then there's maintenance. The nice thing is, we built this thing new. And the first 10 years, probably not going to be a whole lot of maintenance. You know, most of the HVAC or the heating and cooling should still be good to go after 10 years or up to 10 years. The roof should still be good. You know, maybe it needed a little paint every now and then, but there shouldn't be a whole lot of maintenance. So let's say the maintenance was $120 a month. Over 10 years, that'd be $14,400. So this equals, that comes up to $390 a month in expenses. That means we're left, after our $1,000 a month, we're left with $610 $1,000 a month is our gross rent, our gross income. Our net after expenses is $610. Still doesn't sound terrible, does it? After 10 years of rent, that means we've collected net $73,200. So we have a house that's worth $100,000, or that was $100,000. We sat on it, we kept it, we held it for 10 years. We generated $73,000 more in profit. Now we're ready to sell it. We can sell it for, say, $150,000, but that's gross. There's going to be closing costs, things like that. Let's say that the closing costs are at 8%. That's probably a little bit high, right, Steve? No? No? All right. But at 8%, that's $12,000 of closing costs. So we take that off from the $150. That leaves us with proceeds of $138,000. Plus our $73,000 that we collected in rent. So over 10 years of time, we can say that we pocketed $211,000. And again, I'm keeping this kind of basic, but I want you to consider if we have done this, how much work do you think you put in during those 10 years? Now, while the building was going on, I'm assuming that you or I didn't build it, that we paid somebody to build it, okay? So we kind of oversaw it, but that doesn't mean that for the, let's say it was 8 or 9 months of building time, that we were out there every day for 8 or 10 hours a day. We probably went out to the job site, what, 2 or 3 times a week, maybe for an hour? So at the end of the week, we're talking about what, 3 or 4 hours of work, but was it really work? Because we're just kind of overseeing things, right? Not hard work. Did we break a sweat? But now we rent it for 10 years. Yeah, I know Steve's laughing because there's more to the story. You'll learn later on. Don't worry about it. Talk to Andra. But now we rent it for 10 years. And if we used Andra to help us weed through our tenants, our applicants, and we found really good tenants, maybe over the course of that 10 years, we only had 2 different tenants, really good, 2 really good couples. They didn't beat the house up. They're always paid on time. What did we have to do? Maybe every now and then there was a phone call to us. The tenant said, hey, the kitchen sink faucet's leaking. You know, it's just dripping all the time. Could you send somebody over to fix it? Yeah. I pick up the phone call. Hey, Joe, plumber, will you run over to my house and take care of that leaky faucet? So over the 10 years' time, how much effort did we have to really put into this? 3 hours a week? 4 hours a week? There is some bookkeeping. You can pay somebody else to do it, or you can do it yourself. It's not hard. But again, isn't it realistic to think with one property like this, you might have 3 or 4 hours a week into it? Well, at the end of 10 years, you take that $211,000 and pull out your hours, you're making over $100 an hour. For 4 hours of a week, how many hours do you have left in the week? Because God said, 6 days shall you do all of your labor. You got quite a bit more time, right? There's a huge component I left out, debt. How did we pay to build a $100,000 home? We're going to get back to that in a few minutes. But this example, I wanted to do a couple of things. I wanted you to see the difference between active and passive income. I also wanted you to see the difference between gross and net income. Expenses play a big part of this, but if you keep them down, you're still going to make money. As we go through this, I want to make sure that we understand that for the ladies, this applies to you too. I'm not going to take the time to read it, but I'm going to give you some homework. Go home and read Proverbs 31. God very much is talking about the female and her role in life. In verse 16, Proverbs 31, verse 16, it says, she considers a field and she buys it. With the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. I'm not just saying that real estate is the only way she can go or that she can dive into. But when you read Proverbs 31, you see that the female of the family is very active in business. In verse 27, it says, she looks well to the ways of her household and eats not the bread of idleness. She nurtures her family, but while she's doing so, look at all the ways that she does that. She makes use of her skill set. Next, we're going to transition now into four principles that are in the Bible that we can consider when it comes to going about the work that God would have us in. The first one is education as an asset. Go to Proverbs 4. Proverbs 4 and verse 5, it says, get wisdom, get insight, do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom, and whatever else you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. And then if we jump down to verse 13, it says, keep hold of instruction, do not let go, guard her, for she is your life. How much time of your day do you devote to gleaning new knowledge? Better understanding of how things work. And again, I'm very much talking spiritually, but I'm also talking physically. How much of your day do you spend learning about something? How much of your time do you spend in entertainment? Are you balanced? Because there's nothing wrong with some entertainment. I have a coworker. She's in her very early 20s. And at the jewelry store, when it's quiet, my boss is pretty lenient and allows the staff to be on their phones as long as it's not hindering business. Quite often, I see her watching and I have to walk by and I see she's watching TikTok reels. One after another, after another, after another, after another. So here about 2 weeks ago, I stopped and I asked her, I said, I see you watch a lot of those. Do you hone in on anything specific? She says, no, not really, just whatever the next one is. Okay. So I said, you watch a lot of that, don't you? She says, yeah. I said, when's the last time you went out of your way to learn something new? She says, what do you mean? So I gave her a couple of examples. She says, yeah. No, I just like doing this. And I don't remember our whole conversation, but I think I did ask her if she wanted to get married and maybe have a family, you know, at some point in life. And she said, yes. And I said, so do those reels help you do that in any way? And she just gave me a funny look. And I said, you know, I'd like to encourage you, if you watch an hour of reels, I'd like to encourage you to take 10 minutes of that hour and devote it to just learning something new. on YouTube, even on TikTok, but learn something new. And I've been around her enough, I know a little bit of some of her likes, and I said, you really like fashion, don't you? She says, oh yeah. And I said, do you know clothing and accessories pretty well? She says, yeah, to some extent. I said, do you know that there's people that go out to secondhand shops and from time to time realize there's a gold mine there because somebody got rid of a handbag that was hundreds of dollars and now it's $5 because the secondhand shop doesn't realize what they have. And they turn around, they throw it on Facebook Marketplace and they make $50, $100, $150. He says, oh, I never thought about that. I said, well, I didn't watch the whole video, but I saw a clip of a guy, I assume he's out in the LA area, that last year he made over $1 million doing that. Now, he didn't do it just from the standpoint of he found one handbag, throws it up on Marketplace, and then finds a customer for that handbag. Now he's figured out a way to do this on a wholesale level. He's buying things in quantity. He knows where to find things in quantity, and he knows where to offload them in quantity. And I said, I'd like to encourage you to do something else. She says, what's that? I said, if you're going to spend 10 minutes learning how to do something, why don't you spend those 10 minutes learning how to develop a side hustle. I just gave you an idea for a side hustle. Doesn't matter if you want to go towards that one or not, but what if you did that? He says, oh. That was the only response I got. Earlier this week, I walked by her, and just out of the blue, I said, so have you learned anything? And she says, I just watched this video, and she went into detail. I said, are you honing in on a side hustle? I don't know, but maybe. This next week, I'm going to encourage her to implement a goal into her life. Right now, she works for the jewelry store probably 20-some hours a week. And I know she likes how laid back it is. But I also know that she has some expensive tastes. Because yesterday, right before we left, I'm watching her and she's making quite a noise, but she's rubbing her nails back and forth. And they're making a louder noise than normal. And I looked and she has, you know, expensive manicured nails on. And I said, do you do that? Do you get your nails done like once a month? And she says, yeah, probably at least. I said, why are you doing that? Aren't they expensive? Yeah. I said, are they $80? She says, well, these I paid, I think she says like $60 for them. But this week, I'm going to ask her to set a new goal, to come up with a side hustle that she makes a minimum of $100 per month. I ask you to do the same thing. It doesn't matter what age you are. You may think, Aiden, that $100 is kind of far-fetched. That's a lot of money at your age, right? To make in 1 month. But what if you only hit your goal by 50%? You have $50 in your pocket, don't you? If you only hit it by 25%, you still have $25 in your pocket. If you do nothing, what do you have in your pocket? Nothing. Over the course of history, It's never been easier to turn knowledge into income. It's getting easier every day. Wealth is not what we have, but it's how we multiply what we have. You don't need more, you just need to do more with what you have. My wife, Lori, she took it upon herself to help care for her family, look over, provide for her family, to learn how to can. She's now taught dozens of people how to can. She didn't turn it into an income, but she multiplied what she had. And I know she's been blessed because of that. Education does not run out. It doesn't devalue. It does not require some type of physical inventory. It's a treasure that you can scale infinitely. Scale is another word that you'll hear in business quite a bit. Scaling up, scaling down. Education is you saying to yourself, I'm not going to stay where I'm at. I will grow so I can serve others better. So start valuing what you already have. And start utilizing it to expand it. A friend of ours, she's now in her early 20s, as a young teen, maybe even younger than that, I watched her and she constantly was drawing anime. Constantly. Just nonstop. She was good at it. Today, she has her own business as a manicurist, doing nails. And if you want to see them after services, come up to me because I shared with my coworker yesterday what she's done with her talent, her gift. The thing that she's put great effort into and finally figured out a way to monetize it, turn it into income. That was education as an asset. The next one is diversifying income streams. In the Bible, you will see that the wise see danger and they prepare for it. There's always going to be changes in the economy. It doesn't matter what the economy is doing, there is still an area where you can excel in, make money, invest in, prosper in, even though there's areas that are tanking, in a sense. There's always going to be things that are going to influence the economy in a negative way and in a positive way. And there are ways to prepare in advance for those unknowns. Go to Ecclesiastes 11. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1 says, "Send out your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will get it back. Divide your means seven ways, and even eight, for you do not know what disaster may happen on earth." So here God's telling us to diversify. Don't count on a single income stream. Now you might for a season, but as soon as you can, figure out another way to have some other income coming in. And they might work together, but they're still independent of each other. That's the reason I brought up, have a side hustle. You may have a focal point right now, and maybe it's a day job. There's nothing wrong with that, because we talked about, and we're going to talk more about it, building this house for $100,000. Where did the $100,000 come from? You can go into debt for it, but what if you saved up for it? Which means for a season, maybe you are going to rely upon a paycheck. But in most cases, that's only 40 hours a week. You still have lots of hours you can devote to a side hustle. So find a side hustle. God has given each of us gifts. Are you aware of your gifts? When I was in my mid-teens, I started considering this. What do I want to do when I leave school? And I did not want to go to college. However, as much as I thought about it, the only thing I could come up with is, I think I'd like to be in business. So I guess that means I'm going to go back to college or go to college and get a business degree. And there were some huge things in my life I was not considering. When I was probably about 11 or 12 years old, there was an empty lot kitty corner across the street. And all of a sudden, one day, there was three guys showed up in a pickup truck, and they started building a house. I thought that was the coolest thing. I'd go over there every day, and I'd watch them for an hour or two, basically as much as they could stand me. And I watched this framing process go up. And after a couple weeks of this, I started understanding the flow of their day. They'd work on something over here, which means they were creating a mess over here. But then they were going to transition to this over here. And I knew when that transition plate, the mess is still sitting there. So I went over and started pushing a broom. Didn't ask them. I just started doing it. In short order, the boss, it was actually a father and two sons, the dad come over to me one day on a Friday morning, and he says, Aaron, he says, we really appreciate how you help us. He says, I'd like you to go ask your mom to come over and see me. I have a favor to ask of her. So I went and got mom, and he said, told her what I'd been doing. And he says, I'd like to repay him with buying him lunch. Could me and our boys take him to lunch with us? Well, at that time, our family, we didn't go to restaurants. I'm getting taken to lunch. But that just kind of took it over the top. You know, I was seeing and I was learning things. I watched him build a staircase, and I thought that was just amazing. I'd never seen things come together before. I always just saw it in its final state. And here I'm seeing how all the parts, Legos weren't that big of a thing back then, well, I'm seeing all these pieces just come together and it makes sense. It was so cool. I told you my first job was in the music store. And there was a lot of hands-on. There was business. I got to interact with a lot of the customers. But I'm thinking about my education and I'm thinking I just want to go get a simple business degree. Not knowing what I would do with it. Later on, when I come into jewelry, it just hit me one day, all of a sudden, it's like, I'm so thankful I didn't go get that business degree because I never considered I have to work with my hands. I have to do it. And there's a second component. It's not as strong, but my mind has to be active. I have to be figuring out a little bit of a puzzle. I like walking into a new space. I know Steve kind of likes doing this too. A new space meaning maybe an old house and going, ooh, I don't like that. So I'm going to do this and this. Or I'd change this. I'd put this here. I'm going to move the stairwell over here. I really enjoy that aspect of it. I need to work with my hands and I need to be challenged mentally. Never thought about either one of those. Our oldest son, when he was getting ready to graduate, why, he's kind of in the same boat. Not exactly certain what he wants to do, but he knows he'd like computers to be a part of it somehow. He'd actually been awarded a scholarship, a nice but partial scholarship to Baker College. And the only thing on their menu that appealed to him or looked interesting was graphic arts. So that's what he's going to sign up for. But before that, he actually did sign up for the classes, but before it was too late, friends of ours had mentioned the Johnson O'Connor Institute in Chicago, Illinois. They've been around a long time, and they do aptitude testing. And so Sebastian, I footed the bill for half of it. He footed the bill for the other half. He decided to go down to Chicago for 2 days, a little over 2 days, and go through their aptitude testing program. And when he came out of it, I was going to look this up. I think they test for either 12 or 13 areas. One of those areas is dexterity. They actually have you do some challenging things with your hands, your fingers, to see how good you are dexterity-wise. Another one that is really intriguing to me is spatial recognition. Now, for me, and I've always been intrigued as to how this works, you can look at my handwriting. Not very good. I have a tough time drawing a stick man. I mean, a really hard time drawing a stick man. My sister can draw paint two-dimensional really well, and I can't do that. However, if you describe something to me, I can see it in my head. If it's this canister and you describe it relatively decently, it's not a case where I can see it in my head, but I can orient it in the way I need to see the bottom, to see the top, in my mind. And some people that's very hard to do. I got involved with jewelry, knowing I can't draw, and one of the things I have to do is create a new custom piece. Customer comes in off the street, says, I want a pendant that kind of looks like this, and they just verbalize to me in one sense. Well, somehow I've got to convey that back to them that I'm starting to understand what they're telling me. So yes, I would take a piece of paper and a pen, and I would do extremely simple sketch. Are we on the same page? Yeah, that's what I'm going for. Okay, don't worry about my scratch. I've got a good idea at the moment, and we can always tweak it later on. Let me now do the wax for you. What I mean by that, I would literally at that point take a block of wax and life-size carve out the pendant. It wouldn't have all the detail in it, but it would have like 80% of the detail into it, but it would be life-size. And I'd have my customer come back in, is this what you wanted? Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. Now, at this point, we can tweak it. If you want it larger, smaller, skinnier, wider, whatever, we can tweak it. But almost every single time, the customer says, no, I like that. And I'm blown away because I can't draw in two dimension. But I can pick up a block of wax and I can carve out a three-dimensional sculpture. Doesn't make sense to me. But that's an aptitude. Maybe you're in 2D. Maybe some of you can do both. If you don't know your aptitudes today, you can go online and you will find free versions, aptitude testing. Plug that in to your search and take a few tests. And it'll start honing you in on the areas where you excel at. Math will be a part of it. Some people are just good with numbers. Some people aren't. But it will give you a good idea of what you should consider. And if I would have went to Johnson O'Connor, you know, when I was 15 and took their testing, one of the biggest things they would have said, you're good at spatial recognition and you're good with your hands. Don't consider a job that doesn't include at least a good aspect of both of those. They don't plug you into a job. They just say, here's where you should maybe consider. Okay, the next area, and we've already started talking about this, land and real estate. Biblical principles in the Bible. Throughout Scripture, God uses land as a symbol of blessing, of covenant, and of legacy. God told Abraham that he would give the land to his descendants forever. Genesis 13, verse 14. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, raise your eyes now and look from the place where you are, north, south, east, and west. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Rise up, walk through the length and the breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. Land is a never-ending source of provision. It doesn't depend on trends, it doesn't depend upon algorithms, and it cannot be hacked. And there's a huge myth that it's only for the rich. Wrong. Everybody can afford land or a piece of property. It's just, where do you put your priorities at? And we should consider something. We've already read, God wants us to be possessors and not renters. He doesn't want us being the one that pays the $1,000 a month in rent and we don't have a $100,000 home. He wants us owning the home and renting it out. And that's just a generalization. Genesis 2 and verse 15, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till and to keep it. This is before the fall. God's original intention was that we would take this creation and maintain it, steward it, multiply on it. This earth, God's creation, how well is it going to be maintained as God desires if it's owned by the enemy? Are we slacking? Like we already talked about, if we invest in things that depreciate, ultimately we're going to end up with nothing. Land always appreciates. It may take some time. I watched a video here a week or so ago that included the story of a man in a third world country, I don't remember where at, but over decades, he would save aside some money, and over that time, he would invest it in buying empty land about 20 miles outside of town. But 30 years later, it wasn't 20 miles out of town. It was the hot new district where everybody wanted land. He put very little into it because in the moment when he was buying it, no one wanted it. Seemed like no one would ever want it. But he realized someday they're going to want it. If you know the story of Walmart, if you look around, most of the stores are not in the shopping districts. So St. John's, Owosso, those stores, when they went in, there wasn't public services to those areas. Walmart would always buy the cheap land just outside of the public service. So where the fire hydrant stopped, where the water supply stopped, where the sewage stopped, they would buy the land right next door Because water and sewage didn't get to that land, it was drastically cheaper. So they got the land drastically cheaper, but they would pay now to have the utility ran to their store. But it wasn't just to their store. They've got pads or small lots out front. They would sell those off because they also paid to have that water and sewage connected to all of their property. They bought cheap land, they made it more valuable, and then they resold it. Land is a foundation for multiplication. Next area in Scripture that we can see or glean from a little bit, transportation and a moving economy. In Genesis 9 and verse 1, it says, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. Don't stay here. How far can you go? Should you go 20 miles? Maybe at least. He said, go fill the earth. Which means God expected there always to be a moving economy, an expanding economy. Mobility is a key to trade, a key to exchange and expansion. My parents, I thought growing up that they lived through the greatest age, the age of what I call transportation. My parents, during their lifetime, went literally from a horse and buggy to airplanes. And not just an airplane that only one or two people would get on, but where hundreds of people would get on and go around the world on. And I just thought, wow, that has to be the biggest change in all of history. But then most of us have lived through the communication age. We went from having to send a handwritten letter, it taking weeks to get to the other side of the world, to now literally almost instantaneously, we get to talk with somebody on the other side of the earth. And don't think it's over. It's not. It's going to keep expanding in one way, in ways that we can't imagine. What would Amazon be without transportation? If they couldn't get that next little trinket to your door, would you care about Amazon? A friend of ours, he was actually here a couple of weeks ago. Tom left his day job a year and a half ago, I think, maybe a little bit more than that. And didn't really know what he was going to do for a while, but ultimately decided he's going to purchase a van. If you've seen the Amazon vans, blue and gray vans go around, he bought one of those in a sense, and decided to do what they call hotshot trucking. So he's an independent. He can go to a small handful of, or he's narrowed down one, maybe two now, of dispatchers that he can go and just say, okay, do you have any runs for me this week? And he gets the bid on them. And they'll say, we've got a load that you'd pick up in Jackson, Michigan, and it needs to go down to Nashville, Tennessee on Tuesday. And it pays this much per mile. And he can say, because he really wants it, he can say, well, I'll do it for 5 cents a mile cheaper because he really wants that job. Or if he really doesn't want it, but maybe they really need him to take it, maybe he can say, I'd take it, but only if you pay me 15 cents more per mile than what you just offered. So he bids on it. He's been doing that now for 3 or 4 months, and now, last time I talked to him, it's starting to not only pay the bills, but it's actually putting some extra money in his pocket. He's getting into a groove. He knows what to look for, you know, when it comes to loads and how to go about getting those loads there. one of the discussions him and I had earlier on was how hard of a decision it was for him to start. It wasn't about the money. It was about all the what ifs. What if I buy this van and it takes up a lot of my savings and then I don't get loads? Or I don't get loads often enough? Or the weather won't let me drive? There was just so many what ifs. The perfect moment is when we decide to stop waiting. This week, I watched a video I phrased here a couple of years ago, getting my pilot's license, that I wanted to, in somewhat short order, start flipping planes. I've dabbled in flipping homes. I thought, I've dabbled in flipping cars. I thought, you know, I should dabble in flipping planes. But I haven't done anything about it. And this week, I watched a video where this pilot talked about his system now, where he can purchase a plane for $0. In some cases, he literally gets the plane given to him for free. In some cases, they will actually pay him to get rid of their plane. And as he laid out the scenarios, it was like, I see this all the time and hadn't thought about it the way he's thinking about it. He then takes that plane, and now he does it with planes that are need very little work. But in short order, instead of having $100,000 house that he's going to rent out, he now has a $100,000 plane that he leases out to a flight school. They're growing so quickly, they just can't keep up with planes. They just need another plane. And he rents that plane out for a minimum of $3,600 a month. But that's based upon how many hours they fly. If they fly over that maximum number of hours, he gets X number of dollars per hour above and beyond his $3,600 rent. He's making a lot of money with very little effort. But then at the end of the video, he said, but I didn't tell you the best part. By adding this element into it, most of these dollars become tax-free. Like, what? And he's right. It's just knowing how the system works and working the system legally to your own benefit. Over the last 6 months, I found two pickup trucks that were less than half of Blue Book, half of what they're valued at, I was able to purchase them at. So we just covered four areas where God's references in Scripture that we can glean some insight as to how go about work. And not hard work. But now let's talk about some obstacles. Out of control debt. Proverbs 22, verse 7 says, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is a slave of the lender. The last thing God wants of us is to be a slave. And if we owe somebody something, anything, we are their slave. They dictate what happens next. And most debt today is not taken out of actual true need, but so that one can impress somebody else. My car is not nice enough. It's 5 years old. My neighbor's going to look down on me, so I need to go get the next car. I'll take a loan for that. I need to live in the nicer neighborhood. I'll take a loan for that. I need to wear nicer clothes. Put that on a credit card. Deuteronomy 15, verse 6. When the Lord your God has blessed you and he promised you, you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow. You will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. Debt always takes away from the gross. And many times, debt will make it impossible for you to end up with any net. This $100,000 house. If we were to mortgage that for 30 years at 7%, that might be a little bit high right now, but maybe not. That loan is going to cost us $665 per month. We're renting out the house for $1,000, right? Remember that? We have taxes, we have insurance, we have maintenance of $390. When we back those out, we're left with net rent income of $610. Nothing wrong with that. Oh, wait. We financed it for $665 a month. You now owe the bank every month $55. You do have a house, and it will appreciate, and you can sell it later. But that's a huge change from having $610 a month of actual income to now having an expense. And there's ways you can take care of that. Can we raise the rents? Yeah, we can, hopefully. But what if the next 5 years there's a big slump in real estate? Maybe we can't raise our rents. Bank don't care. They still want their money. The other thing that we should consider is at the end of the 10 years, we've had to pay the bank for 10 years now, right? At the end of 10 years, this note of 30 years at 7%, we would have paid $80,000 to the bank. Now, here's a huge catch. That doesn't mean that we only have $20,000 left on our mortgage. At the end of 10 years, we still owe $82,000 on the home. If we can do this without financing, it's huge, isn't it? This is where we have to have a relationship with God. This is where we daily go to Father and just say, what would you have me do today and how would you have me go about it? And if we're striving to be within His will, He's going to bless us in ways that we can't imagine. You've heard me talk about Malachi 3. He's going to open up the windows of heaven. There's going to be abundance. It won't be necessarily from day one. It won't be necessarily in the form of a lottery win, just a lump sum falls in your lap. But just like the gentleman I talked about, I think he might have been in Peru, that just set aside a little bit of his paycheck, and on a regular basis, he bought another little small parcel of land way outside of town. But 30 years later, he was rich. If we ask God, what would you have me do and how would you have me go about it? He's not going to say, I want you to go deep in debt. Does that mean you will never ever use debt? Probably not. But you'll use it drastically different. The next area of obstacle that we should consider is spiritual laziness and or lack of discipline. Proverbs 6 and verse 10. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed warrior. God's kingdom and his creation does not advance with intentions. It advances with diligence. We gotta start doing something. God blesses the true steward. So that means today, are you being the steward that you could or should? The things that are already in your possession, in your ability to steward over, are you truly being a good steward of those, or are you wasting them? Are you burying them? Read the parable of the talents. Are you growing them? Because as God sees you growing, nurturing, protecting his creation, he's going to entrust you with more. If he's not seeing those things from you, he is going to take away from you. He's not going to allow you to degrade his creation. I know one of you here recently started up a new business, cleaning homes. I'm very impressed because in short order, you took that talent and turned it into free rent. Went to her apartment complex and said, hey, could I do some cleaning here? Or maybe they came to you and said, hey, we need our hallways clean, some windows clean, whatever it was, and in return, we'll give you free rent. But we can't be lazy. We got to put forth effort. The next area, lack of purpose in business. In James 4 and verse 3, you ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. There's nothing wrong with going to God and say, Father, would you bless me with such and such? And I'll give you an example. I've shared it maybe with some of you. Big handful of years ago, I needed a bigger screen TV. Didn't want to spend the money on it. And so for the first time in my life, I went to God and just said, Father, I feel awkward in asking this, but I don't want to waste money. And I don't want to gain something that I shouldn't have. But I would enjoy a bigger TV if you would bless me with it. Literally, just a couple of days later, I walk into work, and Jason, my coworker, says, yeah, this was a fun weekend. I said, why? What happened? Well, his wife was out of town for a girls' weekend. He's got the two young boys. He says, Sunday morning, he says, I like to sleep in. He says, but I'm fine because my boys know where the cereal's at and they know how to turn on the TV. I can hide in bed for another hour or two. They come and get me up because the TV came on, but all you can do is hear it. You can't see it. He says, so I went out to the living room. Sure enough, it's just a black screen, but you can hear the audio just fine. He says, so he said, I called up my wife and said, I'm going to to Best Buy to buy a new TV. Here's what's happened. I can't live without this replacing this TV like right now. So he bought a new TV home. I said, what'd you do with the old one? He says, I stuck it down in my basement. I don't know what to do with it. I said, I might be interested in it. He says, well, I said, well, maybe I can fix it. So that night, he had sent me the actual model of it. So that night, I got online, I looked it up, and there was a common issue of the screen going black. And there was a simple, common fix. I had to have some electronics experience. I had to unsolder a capacitor, and solder in a new one. But the video I watched, the guy actually said, here's where I ordered mine from, and here's the exact part number. And he's working on the exact same TV. It's less than $5 for the part and the shipping. So I went back to Jason the next day, and I said, I'm interested in your TV. I said, but I don't know if I can fix it. I said, but I did find out online that if I cannot fix it, I can sell the screen as it is for $125. I said, so I'll give you $125. This was a TV that like a year and a half, 2 years before, he'd paid almost $2,000 for. This was an expensive TV. He says, all right, let me ask my wife. A couple minutes later, he comes back and he says, yeah, that's fine. So I bought the TV for $125, had to wait a couple of days, $5 part come in, took me about 45 minutes, get the back off, get the old part out, put the new part in, turned it on. It looks fabulous. God had blessed me with my big screen TV for $130. So there's nothing wrong with us asking, but what is our motivation? Is it just simply so that we can gain? Many businesses don't fail because of poor skills, but poor motives. I'll give you a huge example. Bud Light. Literally overnight, they went from being the king of beers to nothing because of motives. God's not going to multiply pride. He multiplies purpose, his purpose. So we got to ask ourselves, if we're ever given abundance, what are we going to do with it? Is it just for me to show off? So who are you going to bless? If God blesses you with abundance, who are you going to bless? When purpose aligns with God's kingdom, it's not just a business, it's a mission. James 4 and verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such town and spend it a year there, doing business, making some money. Yet you do not even know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist in that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wishes, we will live and do this or that. Our first step always has to be, Father, would you have me do this? Have me be here? Have me say this? How would you have me go about this? When would you have me go about this? Because sometimes we don't realize we're not ready for this next leap. We may be ready in a little while longer, but not right now. And God knows enough to say, slow down. Or God says, no, no, you're going down the wrong road. Make this turn. This is what I'd rather have you do. The last area, which kind of ties in with this mission theme, not sowing into the kingdom. Again, we got to go back to Genesis 1. Why did God create us and everything we see? For his kingdom. Luke 6, verse 38. It says, give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap, for the measure you give will be the measure you get back. But notice, the measure that we gave is not the exact same measure back. The measure we gave was pressed. It was shaken. You shake that cup with some powder or whatever is in it and realize it settles a little bit. Oh, there's room for more. It was pressed down, shaken. It's running over. God says, no, I want to give you an abundance. In 2010, I've shared with you that God sat me down with a close friend and asked me three questions. One was, do you pray? And in the moment, my answer was, every now and then, but not regularly. The other next question was, do you study God's word? My answer was, I take my Bible to church with me. Third question was, do you give back to God what he requires? And my best answer was, every now and then I feel like I have a little bit of extra and I give it to him. But I was going through the worst thing in my life, or at least it felt like to me the worst thing in my life. And God had to point out, do you want my help or not? Because you're not right now, currently, giving me a single reason to help you out. And it just dawned on me instantly, I want all in, because I always want to be in his blessing, because I do know that when he blesses me, it's in abundance. It is overflowing. That he will protect me the same way, that he'll provide for me the same way, and that he'll allow me to be a conduit of his blessings so I can share it with others. I don't want to be in any other spot. Now, do I do things at times that degrade that? Oh, yeah, I do. But I don't want to be in another spot. There's first fruits in the Bible. There's tithes. There's offerings. There's helping the poor. There's supporting causes. There's generous giving. What are you going to do with abundance? What are you doing with your abundance right now? And I don't care who you are, what your status is, what you have, you already have abundance. What are you doing with it? Are you willing to do more? The rich young lad goes to Christ and asks him, what can I do for my salvation? And he goes down the list. He says, I've done this. I've kept your commandments. I know your law. I do this and I do this and I do this and I do this. And Christ doesn't disagree with him at all. He says, there's just one more thing. Will you sell everything you have and give it to the poor? How could Christ ask that question? Well, it's easy. Because Christ doesn't want us to be empty-handed. It sounds like he's taking away. And it's the same story with Abraham and his son Isaac. He doesn't want to take Isaac away. He just wants to know that that's not your sole purpose in life. Are we aware that it's God who is in control of all of this, not you and I? And as long as we will approach it from that standpoint, that we're stewards, that we're taking care of it, his things, that he wants to bless us in abundance. The opportunity that lays before us is not simply of profit. It's an opportunity for giving and stewardship. Yesterday, I got to sit down with a 15-year-old for about 10 minutes. I need some extra hands from time to time with my side gig. And so I was asking him if he'd be interested in working with me, for me. And I told him, I said, it's going to be hard work. Throughout the day, you're going to be sweating. At the end of the day, you're going to be tired. You're going to be sore. But I'm going to pay you this much per hour. And his eyes just went, what? His brother works part-time for the hardware store downtown. And it was substantially more than his brother. And that's the first thing he says, I can't wait to tell my brother. But I told him, I said, that's a lot of money, isn't it? He says, yeah, it is. I said, I want you to come work for me. I want you to work. And I want you to keep coming to work for me. And his dad's standing right there, who's now one of my bosses. And I said, because your family has taught me that a good employer, you don't want to get rid of them. I've shared with my employers, my three bosses, that dad and son and daughter, I've shared with them several times now, you know, if you would have treated me a little bit worse, I would have looked for something else long ago. But you kept treating me better and better and better. I didn't want to leave. Still don't want to leave in one sense. I want the employees that are valuable to me to stay with me. My employer has paid me bonuses beyond bonuses beyond bonuses at times I never expected. Worked there 34 years. I've taken a lot of time off. Not just for the feasts, but for personal things. They've never once docked my paycheck for one of those days off. That's huge to me, just even by itself. They've given us cars, plus many other things. The Sandys. I called up Steve one day and said, hey, could I come down and go out to eat with you or get a drink? He says, yeah. I said, I got something big on my mind. He says, okay. So we sat down, shared with him. I had some concerns with my first son and his career path. I already shared a little bit of that with him. I wasn't concerned that he was making poor choices. It was just, how does he get some extra good guidance? And dad or mom can always give it. It's like, you're just mad, mom. You don't know anything. But the close friend can say the exact same thing, exact same thing. And, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Steve and Andrew now have employed at one time or another all three of our sons. And it wasn't about, for me, it wasn't about the money. It was about what they gave beyond the money. In Scripture, a farmer is told to leave the corners of their field when they harvest for the poor. To reap in abundance, one must sow with generosity and not out of obligation. God's economy is not about accumulation, but circulation. If we want to be successful in life, live comfortably, peacefully, blessed, then we must seek what God would have us do and how He would have us do it. So you're going to have to really up your game when it comes to talking to Him. What would you have me do? How would you have me go about this? And with that, there's nothing wrong with you realizing right now, over this last hour, as we've been sitting here, something has pricked your heart. You go, ooh, I'd like to do this. Or, ooh, I never thought about, maybe I could try this. Maybe I should. There's nothing wrong with you going to God and saying, Father, this jumped into my mind, into my heart. Would you bless it? I can almost guarantee 9 times out of 10, He's going to, because that thing that came deep within you, I would really like to. Where did that come from? It can come of one of two places or two entities, God or Satan. And it should be pretty easy for you to ask the question and get a solid answer. Did Satan put that in my heart? Nope, that thing, he didn't. That means God put it there. If God put it there, He wants to bless it. It's just, what steps are you going to take to allow Him to bless it? Are you taking those steps? So I started out with saying that we've spent some time focusing on the kids. And now I want to spend some time focusing on the younger generations. The kids, when they get up here, they always have homework. I'm going to ask each of you young adults to come back to me next week with homework. I want you to find 4 passages that talk about giving back to God what He requires. I gave you some hints at what topics you could kind of look up. 4 passages in Scripture that talk about giving back to God what He requires. Tomorrow's the first day of the week. First of 6 days. Make these next 6 days meaningful and successful.